over the years that we've been doing this camp thing, and this was this summer was the 10th anniversary of us doing this in our yard. What the camp gets called has morphed. Some people call it what I just called it. We didn't name it Plett Camp, but because Corrine and the kids basically run this thing, some people just started calling it, and it happens in our yard, started calling it Plett Camp. Some people call it Bike Camp because there's a lot of biking that happens, and a lot of mountain biking, and lots of biking equals lots of bikes, right? Duh. And some kids bring their own bikes, but we also have a fleet of, I don't know at this point, like out of 15 to 20 bikes that we keep and maintain for kids who need bikes. Because we had 27 kids this week, and about 8 or 9 of them brought bikes. So you gotta, you know, when everybody needs to ride, you gotta have bikes. And I've always liked bikes. I like riding them. I like working on them. I think bicycles can be quite beautiful. If you find that idea a little foreign, then I gesture toward this exhibit over here, which I think is a gorgeous bike. Carrie's bike. I think it's a beautiful bicycle. So over the years along the way, I've also learned a little bit about how they're made. And if you could care less about bikes, just stay with me here. I have not lost the plot this early. I may lose it later. Bike frames are, and forgive me if you already know this, usually made out of metal. And there are more exotic ones. I have in the past owned a bike that had a frame that was made out of a blend of various alloys and ceramics. Like it was partly glass. Anyway, as well as carbon fiber, but mostly they're metal. And the kind of metal that they're made out of can have quite an impact on how they feel to ride. So if you buy a bike from the bottom end of the big box retail reality, it's probably going to be made out of just plain old steel. Inexpensive, strong, maybe strong, and heavy, for sure heavy. It'll ride like a tank. But if you put it into the hands of somebody who tends to run into trees a lot, then the odds are pretty good that when that happens, the trees or the rider are going to get the worst of it, and you know the bike's going to be fine, which is, you have to evaluate that for yourself. If you move up the price ladder a little bit, then you start to get into more complex frame materials, and the two most common frame materials, I'm going somewhere with this, are chromoly, which is a blended metal, and aluminum. Now, I could go on. Jody and I would be having fun. Nobody else in the room might be, I don't know, but we would be. I could go on ad nauseum about the characteristics of those different metals. But what I want to mention this morning is that if you put them under enough stress, they'll fail. But they will fail differently. Steel, and to a less extent chromoly, usually fail sort of slowly and incrementally. They're going to bend, they're going to stretch, they're going to deflect, sometimes quite a lot before they actually start to crack. Aluminum, which is a lot more rigid, is more likely to fail abruptly. And an engineer might say it would fail catastrophically. Belief systems, see, I told you I didn't lose the plot. Belief systems are a little bit like bicycle frames. They have some basic things in common. They all look enough alike in many ways that you can stand back from them and go, that's a belief system, that's a bicycle frame. That, you know, you can kind of see that that's what you're talking about. But they have different characteristics, and when you put them under stress, they don't all behave the same. And when they fail, they don't all fail the same. Some of them are more like steel and chromoly. They'll bend and deflect and distort a lot before they crack. And some are more like aluminum. You put them under enough stress and just pow. They just fracture. I spent a bunch of time on that just now because I dig bikes. But more importantly, I did that so that when we go exploring this idea of what happens when belief systems fail, we don't think we're talking about something uniform. We might not, if we want to return to that bike frame image for a moment, we might not even see that our system of belief is under stress or changing until we have some occasion to examine our beliefs and notice the cracks. So we might be having the experience of it being under stress, but we're in the middle of it. We're in the thick of it. We're riding downhill fast, and we're not noticing what's happening to the system. That comes later sometimes when we stand back. I want to offer one other kind of setup idea. Here at the table, we have a general perspective from which we explore spirituality. I've described it in the past as broadly Christian. These days, in this culture, what Christian means, I think, is under a full force overhaul. For some people, just the fact that this community gathers to explore rather than to affirm a particular statement of belief or set of creeds is enough to have it be outside of the fold. For other people, it's that exact thing that makes it feel like a safe place. All to say that from my perspective, talking about the failure of belief systems doesn't feel like something to be stressed about. Systems of belief are things that we make, and so they change. I don't think we're saved by what we believe. I think we're guided by what we believe, for sure. So it matters. It matters a lot. But right belief, in quotation marks, right belief is not the key to the kingdom, so to speak. And I think we'll see shortly how that's been part of the story all along. But first of all, a 21st century story. So I ran across this particular story in this summer's issue of Kootenai Mountain Culture. The Kootenai region of our fine and beautiful country publishes this thing every summer, this big bruiser. It's free everywhere in the Kootenays, and it's a lot of paper and glossy pictures for free. So it's basically a fascinating combination of advertising and interesting journalism. And topically, it's always got some quite thought-provoking stuff in it. But it's a big ad for the Kootenays, basically, in the end. But one of the stories in there this summer was called Courage Caste, as in C-A-S-T-E, the caste system. Courage, caste, and cruelty. And it's sandwiched. This is so Kootenays. The story is sandwiched between an ad for the Nelson Potorium, which is exactly what it sounds like. A really gorgeous, like, I don't know if you can see the photograph, a beautiful facility where you can go and get your pot in Nelson. The ad comes, this is not relevant to the topic, but it's just kind of amusing. It's got this little tiny asterisk at the bottom, you know, like, dealer services fee may apply, like that thing in a radio ad. There's a little tiny fine print at the bottom that says, lest you think less of Nelson and its inhabitants. The Nelson Potorium sells only to members with a legitimate medical need, and you must be over 19. But the ad invites you to come and see what the fuzz is about. Anyway, so it's sandwiched between that ad on the one side of the article and on the other side, this large color photograph for Firebrand, which is a boutique hotel, spa, and bar in Whitefish. So in the middle of it, there's this article on courage, caste, and cruelty. So I think the setting is interesting. I want to read you the first part of the article. I find Carmen Oderio knee-deep in garbage, a bandana tied around his face and his eyes red-rimmed. Genevieve McGregor looks like she hasn't slept in days. We're standing in the middle of the Shanti Nagar slum, also known as the municipal garbage dump for the North Indian city of Rishikesh in the foothills of the Himalayas. Oderio and McGregor are a wholesome couple in their 30s who divide their time between Nelson and Salt Spring Island in British Columbia. I've been friends with them for 5 years. So when they planned to complete their yoga teacher training at its place of origin, the spiritual mecca of Rishikesh along the banks of the Ganges, I went to visit them. I've been living and working in India for 5 months at that point, and I take the train from Delhi when they are a month into the yoga immersion. After 4 weeks of meditation, yoga, and vegetarian living, I expect to find them at peace with themselves in the world. Instead, their inner landscape mirrors the chaos around us. Groups of children, barefoot and without gloves, pick through smoldering heaps of garbage, sorting the city's detritus and salvaging anything of value. Glass, metal, plastics, bits of copper wire are pried out of defunct electronics. In India, they are known as rag pickers. Children of impoverished families who survive by scavenging recyclables from the garbage of the affluent and selling them to scrap dealers. On a good day, these kids make between $1 and $3. On Oderio and McGregor's second day in Rishikesh, they had rented a scooter, taken a wrong turn, and ended up where few Westerners dared to venture, at the foot of a vast wasteland of garbage that rings the city. It wasn't so much the environmental carnage that struck them, it was the children walking through it. Suddenly, their yoga course didn't seem so important. They were confronted by a system thousands of years in the making, yet they became determined to change it within the six-week duration of their trip. The author goes on to talk about how the ancient caste system plays into the situation. The caste that lives like this and that does this job, the Indian word for them translates in English to untouchables. It's a word that they have given to their caste, which is interesting, that they've named themselves. So that plays into this system. There are some staggering statistics. So just in Mumbai, for example, the capital of India, there are 300,000 kids. So half the population of Winnipeg, 300,000 kids. half of whom are under the age of 14, for whom this is their daily reality. And as the story unfolds, and this is why I wanted to share it with you, the author tells about this moment where they're walking through the dump. He's walking through the dump with Addario, and Addario says, karma is bullshit. There is, what could they possibly have done to deserve this? Karma is bullshit. What could they possibly have done to deserve this? That, you guys, is the sound of a belief system failing. And it's not a casual throwaway system that we're talking about here. Karma is an ancient idea. Karma first shows up as an idea in the oldest Hindu text, 1500 years before the Christian era. And it's not a casual matter in Addario's life either, and in his partner's life. The level of commitment that him and his partner have to this system of belief and its intertwinedness with their yoga practice is what brought them to India in the first place. They're committed. But this combination of circumstances and personal experiences takes him to the edge of his system of belief, and then it pushes him off. Now, if I had time to read the whole article to you, I think you would experience, as I did, that what Carmen Addario and Genevieve McGregor do in response to that experience is an inspiring story in itself. They just abandon their yoga training, like they just step away from that entire plan, and they just get whole hog into this community and to trying to do something about it in the 6 weeks that they have. And they encounter all sorts of complexities. It's a really intriguing story. So it isn't just their belief system that gets altered in this experience. It's their lives. So this is complex. The sorts of life experiences that tend to shake up our systems of belief are sometimes dramatic, traumatic, sort of like this was for these folks. But sometimes they're also just mundane and ongoing. They just sort of are incremental. But anytime our experiences gain the sort of critical mass to shove on what we believe, we are dealing with things that really can have an impact on us, however that happens. So it's important to understand, I think when we're going to talk about this a little more, it's important to understand that this is normal, that it isn't just about traumatic experiences. It can also just be about the unfolding of our lives. And it can even be good. And that idea I want to illustrate from an older story that is behind that tradition in which this community stands. So let's take the story. We're going to kind of be, this is kind of the 30,000-foot version of the story of the book of Acts. And in case you're not familiar, Acts is a book in the New Testament part of the Bible that tells the story of the early days of Christianity. There's fascinating stuff in the book of Acts. There's lots of belief system failure and reforming going on. It's like in full flight. The book of Acts, though, starts out with Jesus telling his followers that they are going to be empowered to take the Jesus message to, as we would have it in most English translations, to the ends of the earth. And he defines that more clearly, more contextually, by saying that this empowerment and message carrying will start in Jerusalem, which is where they are, and it will go to Judea and then to Samaria. So we have to remember, because this is a Jewish story that we hijacked, so we have to remember that Jesus is a Jew, which continues to be a surprise to some folks. Jesus is a Jew, and he's talking to fellow Jews when he says this, and he's telling them that they are going to leave the bubble of what they know, and they are going to end up in what is, to them, the furthest corners of the earth. And if we read along in Acts, we can read all the way to chapter 8, and everybody's still in Jerusalem. Like, they're not going anywhere. They're still in the culture, they are still in the world, they are still in the belief system that they have always known. But then, they get knocked out of that world against their preferences by a persecution that breaks out against them, and there is some suffering and some struggle and some displacement. Interesting how that's part of this ancient story and also part of our everyday stories. That's often the way this goes. As part of that struggle, they get scattered geographically. And, guess what? They end up in Judea and Samaria. There's lots more stuff happening in Acts, including some pretty good scraps about the implications of those changing beliefs. But if we fast forward to the end of the book of Acts, we find the Apostle Paul in Rome. Rome, to the Jew of the first century, was the ends of the earth. That was it. That was about as far from being inside the Jewish bubble as you could get, was to be in Rome. And what Paul has done in Rome by the end of the book of Acts was he's rented a house, and he is welcoming anyone that wants to come and talk about the kingdom of God, which is the kind of language that Jesus liked to use for that lived intersection of the human and the divine. And so if we stand back from that story a little bit, we can see how it's about how the Jesus message can't be contained by any group or ethnicity or geographic location or religion. Those are all different words that encompass various systems of belief. Our beliefs don't happen in a vacuum, ever. They always have context. So in this particular story, what happens is that the Jesus message moves from Jerusalem to Rome in the course of this one book. It moves from what people in the story know to what they don't know. It moves from something very particular and deeply local to something global. It moves from one people group to all people. That happens in the book of Acts. Now, let's think about this for just a minute in terms of system failure. The book of Acts, it's easy to forget, especially if you grew up around the Bible. You start to treat it like there's no real people in it. But it is. This is a story that somebody took the time to write down. Something happened and somebody took the time to write it down because they thought it mattered and it would keep mattering. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the story. Some other people read the story and thought, this story really matters. We should preserve this story. And they preserved the story, or we wouldn't have the story. So whenever we read those kinds of stories, whether they're in the Bible or elsewhere, that have survived over a long, long time, one of the questions that's a good question to ask is not actually, what does this mean? We can ask that question. Better question by far is, why did somebody think this was important enough to write down? Why did somebody else think this was important enough to keep telling? What's it got to say to the humans that are doing the work of recording it and keeping it alive? This is a story with real people in it. People that thought that they knew what they believed and that were acting on what they believed. It's worth remembering that religion, the religion of the Hebrews, and the people in this story were part of an ancient belief system. This is a history of a people group and a religion that stretches back to the Bronze Age, to maybe like 2,500 years before the Christian era. This is old, like the concept of karma is old. And it has endured, like that other concept has endured. So, having these experiences for the characters in this story, having these experiences where it fails, or it doesn't behave the way you know that it should, where it changes and where it morphs, that is going to be wrenching sometimes. But it's going to keep the people that stay with the story, it's going to keep those people unfolding and changing and growing as well. This is, historically speaking, how the idea of God, that for which we use the language of God, this is how the idea and our ideas about God keep on expanding and widening their embrace, both in the lives of the individuals in the story and in the world that they're making. And at its heart, that's why I don't think that the failure of systems of belief is something to get too fussed about. It's going to be hard. Absolutely, it's hard. And sometimes we're so resistant to it that we have to undergo some suffering, some struggle, some deep disillusionment, some this system is bullshit experiences to come to the next iteration of what we believe. But that is also normal. It's as old as being human. Is. And it's not the whole story. We'll talk another time about Christianity's truth claims, which get in the middle of this whole conversation. Just another whole big idea that we'll take on. I'm thinking about doing a series in the fall that I've got titled in my imagination, There Might Be a Problem with That. Just a series of things that we should be talking about like adults that are part of our own religious history if we grew up in or around Christianity. So belief system failure, as wrenching as it might be, is normal. And it has enormous good potential because it keeps unfolding us. It got Jesus killed, but it also unfolded the story to the next chapter. Jesus kept saying things like, you've heard it said, you know what you believe, but I say, and then he'd say something that was like, what? Right? Did this all the time. It's pretty prevailing, for instance, in the stream of the Christian tradition of belief systems being unpackaged, rearranged, offered in a completely different way. The arc of the story in Acts can tell us, if we are willing to look at the book from that higher level so we can see the arc of the story and not get stuck in this particular examination in all the details, the arc of that story can tell us, if we will let it, that there is something bigger going on here and that we, together with so many that have gone before us, can be a part of it if we wish to. This is one of the places where human agency shows up, right? It's really important. We don't have to. We can just dig in and say, here I am, here I remain. We have quite a bit of agency in this. We may have to live with enormous dissonance. If here I am, here I remain is an all or nothing belief system for us, and we crash into something in our life that doesn't fit the system, odds are pretty good we're going to abandon the entire system. We're not going to evolve it. We're just going to say, forget it. We're going to walk. We all know, we've lived that story, many of us in the room. We all know people who have lived that story, people who are like, you know, I can't believe what I was taught, so I'll believe nothing. That's an evolutionary dead end. It's understandable, but it doesn't unfold. It's binary. Spirituality in binary is bad company. If we do get involved in this business of being willing to sort of go, yeah, my belief system's like I can feel it creaking, it's going to crack. It's going to break. If we do choose to engage with that, sometimes it's going to feel like home, like I kind of know where I am, I got this, and sometimes it's going to feel like one of those movies where somebody gets knocked unconscious and when the box that they get packed in opens, they're in another part of the world, like we just woke up somewhere foreign. That can be pretty disorienting, to put it mildly. Sometimes our system of belief is going to be a comfort to us. Sometimes we're going to carry that system of belief into a circumstance that challenges it, and we're going to feel like our own system is our enemy. Like it's the thing that's knocking us over when we're trying to stand up. Also a displacing, displeasant experience, but normal and important and even good. If we stay with it, if we don't freak out, we will see that the fact that belief systems are not immutable is liberating. And the reason I would say that as a fact, which of course I can't demonstrate, I can just testify, I can just say that's been my experience. I would say that with the conviction that I do because in my experience, the fact that belief systems are not immutable is liberating because it gives those systems and us, the makers of those systems, room to grow and to change and respond. It gives us room to move from what we think we know to what we know we don't know in ways that help us to respond in life-changing and life-giving ways to what is going on around us. This is not an easy idea, people. Some of you know this deeply in your own experience. This is not an easy idea. And saying, as I just did, that this kind of experience can even be good puts me as the talker in the talky bit in the awkward terrain, and I just want you to know I'm conscious of this, the awkward terrain of saying to the suddenly bereaved, there's meaning in this, it'll all be good someday. Bad timing. So, right, like that may even be true, but saying it to someone who's in the middle of a crisis is not a kindness. So if you're in the middle of a belief system crisis, and you're listening to me say, I think it could be good, and you're thinking, that's bullshit, like karma is bullshit, or whatever frame you're using for it, that's fine. My bad. I didn't say what I said to add to the wrenching sensation. I said it because it's consistent with my experience and the experience of others, and it's what I believe, and it's what I hope for. If we stay with it, if we stay with it, failure of belief systems can provide us with the opportunity to continue to move from the narrow confines of an idea like right belief to the expansive universe of trust and love, a world for which we can authentically and genuinely use a word like faith. So, if you feel like your belief system is under some stress, if you feel like your belief system is failing or has failed, don't panic. You're in good company. And I would contend that, although it may not feel like it in the midst of it, I would contend that the adventure is just beginning. And that, as I said in the blurb this week, these are the kinds of experiences that take us to the precipice of something which, when we look over the edge, we are terrified of falling into. But when, however it happens, when we are pushed over the edge, what we discover is that the thing that we feared as falling to our demise can open into the experience of flying. The experience of no longer being constrained by the thing that we feared. Life, as the folks in that India experience discovered, does not come with guarantees. There's no system of belief that we can make that provides us with the thing that you've heard me use the word certainty for. But, as I would suggest has always been the human experience, our systems of belief, if we hold them as agents of change rather than as places of arrival, can be the things that help us continue to unfold and evolve and come closer to the sensation of our spirituality being one of liberation and flying, and less one of trying to wrestle the complexity of the world into some frame that we made and insist should contain the whole thing. Peace.